This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Shortly after President Obama spoke, I got in touch with Jelani Cobb, a staff writer at The New Yorker. He's the author of The Substance of Hope, Barack Obama and the Paradox of Progress, which was published not long after Obama's election. Jelani also recently hosted a PBS Frontline special on race and policing, which is a terrific look at these issues. Jelani, you were at the 2008 convention for the Democrats, and now you've spent the week in Philadelphia. With President Obama doing everything he can to pass the baton to his old rival and Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. And yet, throughout the convention, to say nothing of the last 8 years, race has been a dominant theme. And I wanted you to step back and give us an assessment about how you feel about the president's handling of race as a subject in the broadest sense, the way you were feeling about it in your book, The Substance of Hope, and the way you're feeling it now as he's facing his last months in office.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, you know, in Denver in 2008, when Obama was being nominated, and I was a delegate at that point, and even among the delegates who were certain that he was about to be nominated, there was still this sense of disbelief. And of course, there was like this bigger sense of disbelief among virtually everyone in the country that this was about to happen. And at the same time, there was this kind of question about whether or not people were going to take this as the automatic inoculation against any concerns or problems related to race in the United States. And at the end of that speech, these confetti cannons went off, and everyone down the row jumped. And it wasn't because we were startled by the cannons. I think there was this real sense of concern for his safety, that even as he was talking about having kind of eclipsed one barrier in American history, people were worried about, quite frankly, his safety and his life, given the history of black leaders in this country and assassination. And so I think that in some ways we've kind of steered between those two shoals in the ensuing years. We've seen kind of point after point after point after point in which race has emerged and been a dominant part of the conversation here. Maybe not in ways that we anticipated. I don't think that people expected to see the kind of explosive, highly contentious situations that have involved, for the most part, firearms that have been a dominant theme in his presidency. And so here in Philadelphia, people have tried to very delicately touch upon that. And so when you saw the mothers of the movement, for instance, the women who had lost children to gun violence in situations, in situations that had serious racial implications, very often with policing, they were preceded by a police officer, and they were preceded by Eric Holder. And of course, it makes sense if you're trying to, if you're a Democratic Party and you're looking to say that you're trying to peel off people from the middle and independents and people who may not quite agree with the Black Lives Matter movement. And so they've been trying to strike that balance kind of time and time again in everything you've seen here.
Do you think there's any space between Obama and Clinton when it comes to Black Lives Matter? both Clintons have struggled with Black Lives Matter in, to some degree in terms of rhetoric and approach in their meetings with them. You've seen protests and so on.
Well, I mean, I think there's certainly a space in terms of credibility. You know, Barack Obama comes to this as, one, a Black person, and then also someone who does have that activist background as a young person in the South Side of Chicago. And if you recall, kind of in the midpoint of the primaries, when Bill Clinton had that blow up at the protesters from Black Lives Matter, and you know, he would kind of went in and defended the 1994 crime bill, and then people thought this was a disaster because African-American voters were supposed to be the firewall that was going to prevent the nomination from being snatched away by Bernie Sanders. And so the next day or a couple days after that, you see Bill Clinton have to kind of walk that back a little bit. And then, of course, Hillary Clinton has been criticized by that movement as well for some of the rhetoric from the 1990s, the super predator references, and so on.
So you've been at these different conventions. What struck you the most in Philadelphia? You saw a party that was not exactly unified, especially outside the arena, but sometimes in the arena as well.
Well, you know, what was interesting is that these two conventions are kind of almost like bookends or mirror images of each other, because in 2008, there was this great deal of fear about the party being divided between Hillary Clinton's people and Barack Obama's people and whether or not that lack of unity would be fatal. As a matter of fact, in talking to the Georgia delegation, former President Jimmy Carter said, well, you know, I'm an expert on what divided conventions do. And said, you know, as you saw in 1976, the Republicans were divided and I won. And he said, then 1980, the Democratic Party was largely divided and they won. And this was a real kind of concern that was floating around among people that turned out to be, for the most part, unfounded. And by the end of the convention, especially after Hillary Clinton gave that kind of barn-burning speech that she gave, which I think has been underrated in the number of speeches and that Hillary Clinton has given, after she gave that speech, you saw the party really come together. And in Philadelphia, it's been the opposite. The delegates seem to be much more skeptical here. And so after the formal nomination of Hillary Clinton, about 300 people or so bolted from the hall. And, you know, many of these were people who were chanting, Bernie, 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 and, you know, marched over to the media tent and, you know, had a spontaneous sit-in in the media tent protesting the way that they, in their terms, had been silenced by the Democratic Party. And last night I went to a meeting of the Green Party that the Green Party held across town from the convention. And there was a serious conversation, even more contentious conversation than you might imagine.
How many people were there?
This was about maybe 300 or 400 people. This building was packed. And they were debating whether or not Bernie Sanders should be considered a sellout for having given his endorsement to Hillary Clinton.
And yet they're facing, in the arguments of the majority of the delegates are there and the Democratic constituency, they are facing ultimately a binary choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the real existing world.
Well, I think that, you know, what's interesting is when you talk with these people, they kind of reject the binary. And so Jill Stein has this phrase that she uses that it's time to reject the lesser of two evils for the greater good.
Even if that means electing Donald Trump.
Well, I think there's a kind of cause and effect disjuncture here where I think a lot of people who are, you know, liberals or maybe independents would see that as being the case. But in those circles, there is not that kind of assumption that those two things are connected. Jill Stein said yesterday in this meeting, she said, we're choosing between the lesser of two evils, and it's debatable which is the lesser. And one of the other things I think has been probably the case with Hillary is that having been in public life for decades, it's telling that the super predator line that she made was not fatal to her at the time. And the great deal of controversy that she's encountered has been 20 years later, when we have a very different set of attitudes about it, and not coincidentally, a much lower crime rate than we had in 1995, 1996.
One of the interesting speeches came from Jesse Jackson, who didn't quite have the primetime spot that he had in previous years, but he was no less interesting, and he said that Hillary does understand that Black Lives Matter, and said that she would stand up against the NRA and stand up to the Washington gun lobby and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And it's not quite clear how she would go about doing that. I'd love to know your take on that, your view of what Hillary Clinton really can in the real existing world do when it comes to guns that Barack Obama could not.
I'm not sure what any American politician is going to do or able to do to break, you know, the logjam that we have right now. But I do think that one of the things that, you know, that happens, it was not, I think, coincidental that Michael Bloomberg was here to speak, not simply as someone who is appealing to independence and, you know, a businessman and so on, but also someone who's had this kind of very vocal presence about the issues around guns in American society. And I think guns are the way of finessing these complexities between wanting to appeal to people who think about Black Lives Matter as important and wanting to appeal to people who think that the safety and protection of police officers is paramount. And the common denominator between those two things is guns.
Jelani, have a safe trip home from Philadelphia. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Thank you.
Jelani Cobb, staff writer at The New Yorker.